There's something about him, Eishi.
Serini stood with Eishi outside the palace and watched the empty food cart pull away. It was hard to believe that for all the afternoon's work, they had distributed only 3 meals. It would all be gone by noon tomorrow, if it wasn't gone already.
Oh, my lady.
Eishi had watched the food distribution from the top of the wall, near where Aedon had been standing. He had wanted to accompany her, of course, but she had forbidden it. The Seon was her main source of information about Elantris and its leaders, and she didn't want to make an obvious connection between the two of them.
The guide.
Serini turned and strolled through the broad tapestry-lined entryway of the king's palace. Aedon liked tapestries far too much for her taste.
The man called Spirit. He pretended to be following the other's orders, but he was no servant. Aedon kept shooting glances at him during our negotiations, as if looking for reassurance. Do you think perhaps we got the names of the leaders wrong?
It's possible, my lady. However, the Elantrians I spoke with seemed very certain. Kerete, Aedon, and Shehor are the names I heard at least a dozen times. No one mentioned a man named Spirit.
Have you spoken with these people recently?
Actually, I have been focusing my efforts on the guards. The Elantrians were hesitant to give anything more than names, my lady. The guards, however, were very free with their opinions. They have little else to do all day besides watch the city. I put their observations together with the names I gathered and produced what I told you.
Serini paused for a moment, leaning against a marble pillar.
He's hiding something.
Oh, dear. My lady, don't you think you might be overextending yourself? You've decided to confront the Geon, liberate the court women from masculine oppression, save Aerilan's economy, and feed Elantris. Perhaps you should just let this man's subterfuge go unexplored.
You're right. I'm too busy to deal with Spirit. That's why you're going to find out what he's up to. Go back to the city. You shouldn't have to go very far inside. A lot of Elantrians loiter near the gate. Ask them about Spirit, and see if you can discover anything about the treaty between Kerete and Aedon.
Yes, my lady.
I wonder if maybe we misjudged Elantris.
I don't know, my lady. It is a very barbarous place. I witnessed several atrocious acts myself and saw the aftermath of many others. Everyone in that city bears wounds of some sort, and from the sounds of their moans, I would guess that many of the injuries are severe. Fighting must be common.
However, she couldn't help thinking of Spirit and how strikingly unbarbaric he had been. He put the lords at ease, conversing with them affably, as if he weren't damned, and they the ones who locked him away. She had found herself almost liking him by the end of the afternoon, though she worried that he was toying with her. So she had remained indifferent, even cold toward Spirit, reminding herself that many a murderer and tyrant could appear very friendly if he wanted to. Her heart, however, told her that this man was genuine. He was hiding things, as all men did, but he honestly wanted to help Elantris. For some reason, he seemed particularly concerned with Serini's opinion of him. And, walking out of the entryway toward her rooms, Serini had to try very hard before she convinced herself that she didn't care what he thought of her. Prathan was hot within his blood-red armor, exposed as he was to the bright sunlight. He was consoled by how imposing he must look, standing atop the wall with his armor shining in the light. Of course, no one was looking at him. They were all watching the tall, Teoish princess distribute her food. Her decision to enter Elantris had shocked the town, and the king's subsequent bestowal of permission had done so again. The walls of Elantris had filled early, nobles and merchants packing themselves along the open wall-top walkway. They had come with faces like men watching a Svordish shark fight, leaning over the wall to get the best view of what many projected would be a thrilling disaster. It was commonly thought that the savages of Elantris would rip the princess apart within the first few minutes of her entrance, then proceed to devour her. Prathan watched with resignation as Elantris's monsters came placidly, refusing to ingest even a single guard, let alone the princess. His demons refused to perform, and he could see the disappointment in the crowd's faces. The princess's move had been masterful. castrating Hraithen's devils with a sweep of the brutal scythe known as Truth. Now that Serini's personal aristocrats had proven their courage by entering Elantris, pride would force all the others to do so as well. Hatred of Elantris would evaporate, for people couldn't fear that which they pitied. As soon as it became obvious that no princesses would be devoured this day, the people lost interest, returning down the wall's long flight of steps in a steady, dissatisfied trickle. Hraithen joined them, climbing down the steps, then turning toward the center of Kaeli and the Dorethi Chapel. As he walked, however, a carriage pulled up alongside him. Hraithen recognized the Aeon on its side, Aeon Rhyai. The carriage pulled to a stop, and the door opened. Hraithen paused for just a moment, then climbed in, seating himself opposite Duke Telrhyai. The Duke was obviously not pleased.
I warned you about that woman. The people will never hate Elantris now. And if they don't hate Elantris, they won't hate you, Koreth, either.
The girl's efforts are irrelevant.
I don't see how that is the case.
How long can she keep this up? A few weeks, a month at the most. Right now, her excursions are a novelty, but that will wear off soon. I doubt many of the nobility will be willing to accompany her in the future, even if she does try and keep these feedings going.
The damage is done.
Hardly, Lord Telrhyai. It has barely been a few weeks since I arrived in Avalon. Yes, the woman has dealt us a setback, but it will prove a minor inconvenience. You know as I know that the nobility are a fickle group. How long do you think it will take them to forget their visits in Elantris? Besides, my work with Elantris was only a small part of our plan. The instability of Aedon's throne, the embarrassment he will sustain at the next taxing period, is what we should be focusing on.
The king recently found some new contracts in Teod.
They won't be enough to recoup his losses. His finances are crippled. The nobility will never stand for a king who insists that they maintain their level of wealth, but who doesn't apply the same standard to himself. Soon, we can begin spreading rumors as to the king's reduced circumstances. Most of the high-ranking nobility are merchants themselves. They have means of discovering how their competitors are doing. They'll find out just how much Aedon is hurting, and they'll begin to complain.
Complaints won't put me on the throne!
You'd be surprised. Besides, at that same time, we'll begin implying that if you were to take the throne, you would bring Avalon a lucrative trade treaty with the East. I can provide you with the proper documents. There will be money enough for all. And that is something that Aedon hasn't been able to provide. Your people know that this country is on the verge of financial ruin. Fjordan can bring you out of it.
Telrhyai nodded slowly. The tactic wasn't as certain as Hraithen implied, but the explanation would do for Telrhyai while Hraithen devised other plans. Once it was known that the king was bankrupt and Telrhyai was rich, certain other pressures placed on the government would make for an easy, if abrupt, transfer in power. The princess had countered the wrong scheme. Aedon's throne would collapse, even as she handed out food to the Elantrians, thinking herself clever for having foiled Hraithen's plot.
I warn you, Hraithen. Do not assume me a Dorethi pawn. I go along with your plans because you are able to produce the wealth that you promised me. I won't just sit back and be pushed in any direction you wish, however.
I wouldn't dream of it, your lordship.
Driver, stop here!
They weren't even halfway to the Dorethi Chapel.
My mansion is in that direction.
Telrhyai pointed down a side street.
You can walk the rest of the way to your chapel.
Hraithen clenched his jaw. Someday this man would have to learn proper respect for Dorethi officials. For now, however, Hraithen simply climbed out of the carriage. Considering the company, he preferred walking anyway.
Kind of response in Aerolon.
Agreed. I've been serving the Empire in Kaeli for over a decade, and we've never had more than a few conversions a year.
Hraithen passed the priests as he entered the Dorethi Chapel. They were minor underpriests, of little concern to him. He noticed them only because of Diloth.
It has been a long while. Though I remember a time just after the pirate Drio crushed Throat Assaulted Tail, when there was a wave of conversions in Aerilar.
Wraithen frowned. Something about Diloth's comment bothered him. He forced himself to continue walking, but he shot a glance back at the Arteth. Drioke Crushthroat had attacked Teod 15 years before. It was possible that Diloth would remember such a thing from his childhood. But how would he have known about Aerilan conversion rates? The Arteth had to be older than Wraithen had assumed. Much older. Wraithen's eyes widened as he studied Diloth's face in his mind. He had placed Diloth as no older than 25, but he could now detect hints of age in the Arteth's face. Only hints. However, he was probably one of those rare individuals who seemed many years younger than they really were. The young Aerilish priest feigned lack of experience, but his planning and scheming revealed an otherwise hidden degree of maturity. Diloth was far more seasoned than he led people to assume. But what did that mean? Wraithen shook his head, then entered his rooms. Diloth's power over the chapel was growing as Wraithen struggled to find an appropriate and willing new head Arteth. Three more men had refused the position. That was more than just suspicious. Wraithen was certain that Diloth had something to do with the matter.
He's older than I assumed. He's also had influence over K.E.'s priests for a very long time.
Diloth claimed that many of the original Dorethi followers in K.E. had originally come from his personal chapel in southern Aerilan. How long had it been since he'd come to K.E.? Fionn had been head Arteth when Diloth arrived, but Fionn's leadership in the city had lasted a long time. Diloth had probably been in the city for years. He had probably been associating with the other priests, learning to influence them, gaining authority over them that entire time. And given Diloth's ardor for Shu Dareth, he had undoubtedly chosen the most conservative and effective of K.E.'s Arteths to be his associates. And those were exactly the men Wraithen had let remain in the city when he first arrived. He'd sent away the less devoted men, and they would have been the ones that would have been insulted or disturbed by Diloth's extreme ardor. Unwittingly, Wraithen had called the chapel's numbers in Diloth's favor. Wraithen sat down at his desk, this new revelation disturbing him. No wonder he was having trouble finding a new head Arteth. Those who remained knew Diloth well. They were probably either afraid to take a position above him, or they had been bribed by him to step aside.
He can't have that kind of influence over them all. I'll just have to keep looking. Eventually, one of the priests will take the position.
Still, he was worried about Diloth's startling effectiveness. The Arteth held two firm grips over Wraithen. First, Diloth still had power over many of Wraithen's strongest converts through his Odive oaths. Second, the Arteth's unofficial leadership of the chapel was growing more and more secure. Without a head Arteth, and with Wraithen spending much of his time giving sermons or meeting with nobility, Diloth had slowly been siphoning away power over the day-to-day workings of the Dorethi Church in Aerilan. And, over it all, there was an even more disturbing problem. Something Wraithen didn't want to confront. Something even more disarming than Serini's trial or Diloth's maneuverings. Wraithen could face external forces such as theirs, and he could be victorious. His internal wavering, however, was something entirely different. He reached into his desk, seeking out a small book. He remembered unpacking it into the drawer, as he had done during countless other moves. He hadn't looked at it in years, but he had very few possessions, and so he had never found himself overburdened enough to discard the book. Wraithen selected the page he was looking for.
I have found purpose. Before I lived, but I didn't know why. I have direction now. It gives glory to all that I do. I serve in Lord Yadda's empire, and my service is linked directly to him. I am important.
Priests in the Dorethi faith were trained to record spiritual experiences, but Wraithen had never been diligent in this particular area. his personal record contained only a few entries, including this one, which he had written a few weeks after his decision to join the priesthood many years before, just before he entered Dakhor Monastery.
What happened to your faith, Wraithen?
Omine's questions plagued Wraithen's thoughts. Had Wraithen become cynical, performing his duties simply because they were familiar? Had his preaching become a logical challenge and not a spiritual quest? He knew, in part, that it had. He enjoyed the planning, the confrontation, and the thinking it took to convert an entire nation of heretics. Even with Diloph distracting him, Wraithen found the challenge of Aerilon invigorating. But what of the boy Wraithen? What of the faith, the almost unthinking passion he had once felt? He could barely remember it. That part of his life had passed quickly, his faith transforming from a burning flame into a comfortable warmth. Why did Wraithen want to succeed in Aerilon? Was it for the notoriety? The man who converted Aerilon would be long remembered in the annals of the Dorethi Church. Was it a desire to be obedient? He did, after all, have a direct order from Wern. Was it because he seriously thought the conversion would help the people? He had determined to succeed in Aerilon without a slaughter such as he had instigated in Duladel. But again, was it really because he wanted to save lives? Or was it because he knew that a smooth conquest was more difficult, and therefore more of a challenge? His heart was as unclear to him as a room filled with smoke. Diloph was slowly seizing control. That in itself wasn't as frightening as Wraithen's own sense of foreboding. What if Diloph was right to try and oust Wraithen? What if Aerilon would be better off with Diloph in control? Diloph wouldn't have worried about the death caused by a bloody revolution. He would have known that the people would eventually be better off with Shudareth, even if their initial conversion required a massacre. Diloph had faith. Diloph believed in what he was doing. What did Wraithen have? He wasn't certain anymore.
I think perhaps that she needs this food as much as we do.
Raoden regarded the slight-framed Torine with a skeptical eye. Ahane's daughter had pulled her reddish gold hair up under a protective scarf, and she wore a simple blue dress, something she'd probably had to borrow from one of her maids, considering the average Aerilish noblewoman's extravagant wardrobe.
Be nice to her.
Serini handed Raoden a box from the cart.
She's the only woman brave enough to come, though she only agreed because I had Shudan ask her. If you scare that girl away, none of the others will ever come.
It seemed that a week's worth of distributing food together had softened her hatred of him somewhat, but she was still cold. She would respond to his comments, even converse with him, but she would not let herself be his friend. The week had been surreally unnerving for Raoden. He'd spent his time in Elantris, accustoming himself to the strange and new. This week, however, he had been forced to reacquaint himself with the familiar. It was worse in a way. He could accept Elantris as a source of pain. It was entirely different to see his friends the same way. Even now, Shudan stood next to the girl, Torine, his hand on her elbow as he encouraged her to approach the line of food. Shudan had been one of Raoden's best friends. The solemn Jindo and he had spent hours at a time discussing their views on Aerilon's civic problems. Now, Shudan barely noticed him. It had been the same with Eondel, Kaiayan, Roael, and even Lucal. They had been companions to the handsome Prince Raoden, but never to the accursed creature known as Spirit. Yet Raoden found it hard to be bitter. He couldn't blame them for not recognizing him. He barely recognized himself anymore, with his wrinkled skin and spindly body. In a way, his own subterfuge hurt even more than his friend's ignorance. He couldn't tell them who he was, for news of his survival could destroy Aerilon. Raoden knew very well that his own popularity exceeded that of his father. There would be some who would follow him, Elantrian or not. Civil war would serve no one, and at the end of it, Raoden would probably find himself beheaded. No, he definitely had to remain hidden. Knowledge of his fate would only give his friends pain and confusion. However, concealing his identity required vigilance. He made a point of staying away from anyone who had known him too well, trying to be cheerful and friendly, but not open. which was one reason why he found himself gravitating towards Serini. She hadn't known him before, and so he could discard his act around her. In a way, it was kind of a test. He was curious to see how they would have gotten along as husband and wife, without their separate political necessities getting in the way. His initial feelings seemed to have been correct. He liked her. Where the letters had hinted, Serini fulfilled. She was strong and determined. She didn't avert her eyes downward whenever a man addressed her, no matter how noble his rank. She gave orders easily and naturally, and never feigned weakness in order to draw a man's attentiveness. Yet the lords followed her. Eondel, Shuden, and even Duke Roile. They deferred to her in judgment and responded to her commands as if she were king. There was never a look of bitterness in their eyes either. She gave her orders courteously, and they responded naturally. Raoden could only smile in amazement. It had taken him years to earn these men's trust. Serini had done it in a matter of weeks. She was impressive in every attribute. Intelligent, beautiful, and strong. Now, if only he could convince her not to hate him. Raoden turned back to the work. Except for Shuden, all of the day's nobles were new to the process. Most were minor noblemen of little import. But there were a couple of important additions. Duke Telrai, for instance, stood to one side, watching the unloading process with lazy eyes. He didn't participate himself, but had brought a manservant to fill in his place. Telrai obviously preferred to avoid any actual exertion. Raoden shook his head. He had never cared much for the Duke. He had once approached the man, hoping that Duke Telrai might be persuaded to join in Raoden's opposition to the king. Telrai had simply yawned and asked how much Raoden was willing to pay for his support, then had laughed as Raoden stalked away. Raoden had never been able to decide whether Telrai had asked the question out of actual greed, or if he had simply known how Raoden would react to the demand. Raoden turned to the other noblemen. As usual, the newcomers stood in a small, apprehensive cluster around the cart they had unloaded. Now, it was Raoden's turn. He approached with a smile.
Hello, everyone! I thank you for coming. My name is Spirit, and it is a pleasure to see you all. And despite what you have heard, I can promise you the only thing that is going to be eaten today are these fine offerings you have brought.
With that, Raoden walked up to each of the nobles, shaking hands, mostly against the owner's wills. However, their tension began to wane after just a few minutes of mingling. Raoden had done a good job of easing their fears of being eaten, and none of the other food distributors had fallen to the Sheod, so they could dismiss their fears of infection. Acclimatizing the nobles was a task he had taken upon himself. It had been obvious on the second day that Serini had nowhere near as much influence with most aristocrats as she did with Shuden and the others of Raoden's former circle. If Raoden hadn't stepped in, that second group would probably still be standing frozen around the cart. Serini hadn't thanked him for his efforts, but she had nodded in slight appreciation. Afterward, it had been assumed that Raoden would help each new batch of nobles as he had the second one. It was odd to him, participating in the event that was singularly destroying everything he had worked to build in Elantris. However, beyond creating an enormous incident, there was little he could do to stop Serini. In addition, Merishe and Karete were receiving vital goods for their cooperation. Raoden would have to do a great deal of rebuilding after Serini's trial finished, but the setbacks would be worth the effort. Assuming, of course, he survived long enough, the casual thought brought a sudden awareness of his pains. They were with him as always, burning his flesh and eating at his resolve. He no longer counted them, though each one had its own feeling, an unformed name, a sense of individual agony. As far as he could tell, his pain was accelerating much more quickly than anyone else's. A scrape on his arm felt like a gash running from shoulder to fingers, and his once stubbed toe blazed with a fire that ran all the way to his knee. It was as if he had been in Elantris a year and not a single lonely month. Or maybe his pain wasn't stronger. Maybe he was just weaker than the others. Either way, he wouldn't be able to endure much longer. A day would soon come, in a month or maybe two, when he would not awaken from his pain, and they would have to lay him in the Hall of the Fallen. There, he could finally give full devotion to his jealous agony. Raoden pushed such thoughts away, forcing himself to start handing out food. He tried to let the work distract him, and it helped a little. Each Elantrian received a small sack filled with a variety of ready-to-eat items. This day's portions were much like every other. Surprisingly, Serini had found some Jindoese sour melons. The fist-sized red fruits glistened in the crate beside Raoden, challenging the fact that they were supposed to be out of season. He dropped one fruit in every bag, followed by some steamed corn, various vegetables, and a small loaf of bread. The Elantrians accepted the offerings thankfully, but greedily. Most of them scurried away from the cart as soon as they received their meal, off to eat in solitude. They still couldn't believe that no one was going to take it away from them. As Raoden worked, a familiar face appeared before him. Galadon wore his Elantris rags, as well as a tattered cloak they had made from dirty Elantris scavengings. The doula held out his sack, and Raoden carefully switched it for one filled with 5 times the regular allotment. It was so full, it was hard to lift with one weakened Elantrian hand. Galadon received the sack with an extended arm, the side of his cloak obscuring it from casual eyes. Then he was gone, disappearing through the crowd. Saolin, Marishe, and Karete would come as well, and each would receive a bag like Galadon's. They would store what items they could, then give the rest to the Hoeed. Some of the fallen were able to recognize food, and Raoden hoped that regular eating would help restore their minds. So far, it wasn't working. The sound of the closing gate reminded Raoden of his first day in Elantris. His pain then had only been emotional, and comparatively weak at that. If he had truly understood what he was getting into, he probably would have curled up and joined the Hoeed right then and there. He turned, putting his back to the gate. Marishe and Galadon stood in the center of the courtyard, looking down at several boxes Serini had left behind, fulfillment of Karete's most recent demands.
Please tell me you figured out a way to transport those.
The last few times they had ended up carrying the boxes back to New Elantris one at a time, their weakened Elantrian muscles straining at the effort.
Of course I have. At least it should work.
The small man retrieved a slim metal sheet from behind a pile of rubble. All 4 sides curved up slightly, and there were 3 ropes connected to the front.
A sled coated with grease on the bottom. I couldn't find any wheels in Elantris that weren't rusted or rotted. But this should work. The slime on these streets will provide lubrication to keep it moving.
No matter how poorly Marishe's sled worked, it couldn't be any worse than walking back and forth between the gate and the chapel 12 times. In fact, the sled functioned fairly well. Eventually, the grease rubbed away, and the streets grew too narrow to avoid the patches of torn-up cobblestones. And, of course, dragging it along the slime-free streets of New Elantris was even more difficult. On the whole, however, even Galadon had to admit that the sled saved them quite a bit of time. The group had pulled up in front of the chapel.
He finally did something useful.
Bah!
Despite the indifferent snort, Raoden could see the pleasure in Marishe's eyes. Galadon stubbornly refused to acknowledge the little man's ingenuity. The doula complained that he didn't want to further inflate Marishe's ego, something Raoden figured was just about impossible.
Let's see what the princess decided to send us this time.
Raoden pried open the first box.
Watch out for snakes.
Raoden dropped the lid to the cobblestones. The box contained several bales of cloth, all of which were a sickeningly bright orange.
Sool, that has to be the most vile color I have ever seen in my life.
Agreed.
You don't seem very disappointed.
Oh, I'm thoroughly revolted. I just enjoy seeing the ways she finds to spite us.
Galadon moved to the second box as Raoden held up an edge of the cloth, studying it with a speculative eye. Galadon was right. It was a particularly garish color. The exchange of demands and goods between Sereni and the gang leaders had become something of a game. Mary Shay and Karate spent hours deciding how to word their demands, but Sereni always seemed to find a way to turn the orders against them.
Oh, you're going to love this.
Galadon peered into the second box with a shake of his head.
What?
It's our steel.
Last time they had asked for 20 sheets of steel, and Sereni had promptly delivered 20 plates of the metal, pounded so thin they almost floated when dropped. This time they had asked for their steel by weight. Galadon reached into the box and pulled out a handful of nails. Bent nails.
There must be thousands of them in here. Well, I'm sure we can find something to do with them.
Fortunately, Ionic the blacksmith had been one of the few Elantrians to remain true to Raoden. Galadon dropped the nails back into their box with a skeptical shrug. The rest of the supplies weren't quite as bad. The food was stale, but Karate had stipulated that it had to be edible. The oil gave off a pungent smell when it was burned. Raoden had no idea where the princess had found that particular item. And the knives were sharp, but they had no handles.
At least she hasn't figured out why we demand wooden boxes.
Raoden inspected the vessels themselves. The grain was good and strong. They would be able to pry the boxes apart and use the wood for a multitude of purposes.
I wouldn't be surprised if she left them unsanded just to give us splinters.
Galadon sorted through a pile of rope, looking for an end to begin unraveling the mess.
If that woman was your fate, Sewell, then your Dormai blessed you by sending you to this place.
She's not that bad.
Marisha began to catalog the acquisitions.
I think it's odd, my lord. Why is she going to such lengths to aggravate us? Isn't she afraid of spoiling our deal?
I think she suspects how powerless we really are, Marisha. She fulfills our demands because she doesn't want to back out of her promise, but she doesn't feel the need to keep us happy. She knows we can't stop the people from accepting her food.
Marisha nodded, turning back to his list.
Come on, Galadon.
Raoden picked up the bags of food for the Hoeed.
Let's find Karate.
New Elantris seemed hollow now. Once, right before Sereni's arrival, they had collected over 100 people. Now, barely 20 remained, not counting children and Hoeed. Most of those who had stayed were newcomers to Elantris. People like Seolin and Marisha that Raoden had rescued. They didn't know any other life beyond New Elantris, and were hesitant to leave it behind. The others, those who had wandered into New Elantris on their own, had felt only faint loyalty to Raoden's cause. They had left as soon as Sereni offered them something better. Most now lined the streets surrounding the gate, waiting for their next handout.
Sad, Gola?
Galadon regarded the now clean but empty houses.
Yes. It had potential, if only for a week.
We'll get there again, Sewell.
We worked so hard to help them become human again, and now they've abandoned what they learned. They wait with open mouths. I wonder if Sereni realizes that her three-meal bags usually last only a few minutes. The princess is trying to stop hunger, but the people devour her food so fast that they end up feeling sick for a few hours, then starve for the rest of the day. An Elantrian's body doesn't work the same way as a regular person's.
You are the one who said it, Sewell. The hunger is psychological. Our bodies don't need food. The door sustains us.
Well, at least it doesn't make them explode.
They continued to walk, eventually passing Kehair, scrubbing complacently at a wall with a brush they had gotten him in the last shipment. His face was peaceful and unperturbed. He hardly seemed to have noticed that his assistants had left. He did, however, look up at Raoden and Galadon with critical eyes.
Why hasn't my lord changed?
Raoden looked down at his Elantris rags.
I haven't had time yet, Kehair.
After all the work, Mistress Maeri went to sew you a proper outfit, my lord.
All right. Have you seen Karate?
She's in the Hall of the Fallen, my lord, with the Hoeed.
Following the elderly cleaner's direction, Raoden and Galadon changed before continuing on to find Karate. Raoden was instantly glad they had done so. He had nearly forgotten what it was like to put on fresh, clean clothing. Cloth that didn't smell of muck and refuse, and that wasn't coated in a layer of brown slime. Of course, the colors left something to be desired. Sereni was rather clever with her selections. Raoden regarded himself in a small piece of polished steel. His shirt was yellow, dyed with blue stripes. His trousers were bright red, and his vest a sickly green. Overall, he looked like some kind of confused tropical bird. His only consolation was that as silly as he looked, Galadon was much worse. The large, dark-skinned doula looked down at his pink and light green clothing with a resigned expression.
Don't look so sour, Galadon. Aren't you doulas supposed to be fond of garish clothing?
That's the aristocracy, the citizens and republicans. I'm a farmer. Pink isn't exactly what I consider a flattering color, Golo.
Then he looked up at Raoden with narrow eyes.
If you make even one comment about my resembling a Cathari fruit, I will take off this tunic and hang you with it.
Someday I'm going to find that scholar who told me all doulas were even-tempered and force him to spend a week locked in a room with you, my friend. All right, come on.
They found Karete sitting outside the Hall of the Fallen, a length of string and a needle held in her hand. Saolin sat in front of her, his sleeve pulled back, exposing a long, deep gash running along his entire arm. There was no flowing blood, but the flesh was dark and slick. Karete was efficiently sewing the gash back together.
Saolin, what happened?
The soldier looked down with embarrassment. He didn't seem pained, though the cut was so deep, a normal man would have fainted long before from loss of blood.
I slipped, my lord, and one of them got to me.
Raoden regarded the wound with dissatisfaction. Saolin's soldiers had not thinned as badly as the rest of Elantris. They were a stern group, not so quick to abandon newfound responsibility. However, their numbers had never been that great, and they barely had enough men to watch the streets leading from Shaor's territory to the courtyard. Each day, while the rest of Elantris glutted themselves on Serini's offerings, Saolin and his men fought a bitter struggle to keep Shaor's beasts from overrunning the courtyard.
I am so sorry, Saolin.
No mind, my lord.
However, this wound was different from previous ones. It was on his sword arm.
My lord.
Saolin looked away from Raoden's eyes.
What is it?
We lost another man today. We barely kept them back. Now, without me, we'll have a very difficult time of it, my lord. My lads are good fighters, and they are well equipped, but we won't be able to hold out for much longer.
I'll think of something.
The man nodded hopefully.
Saolin, how did you get a cut like that? I've never seen Shaor's men wield anything other than sticks and rocks.
They've changed, my lord. Some of them have swords now. And whenever one of my men falls, they drag his weapons away from him.
Really?
Yes, my lord. Is that important?
Very. It means that Shaor's men aren't quite as bestial as they would have us believe. There's room enough in their minds to adapt. Some of their wildness, at least, is an act.
Dolokan of an act.
Well, perhaps not an act. They behave like they do because it's easier than dealing with the pain. However, if we can give them another option, they might take it.
We could just let them through to the courtyard, my lord.
Karete finished her stitching. The woman was proficient. She had met her husband while serving as a nurse for a small mercenary group.
No. Even if they didn't kill some of the nobles, the Elantris City guards would slaughter them.
Isn't that what we want, Sul?
Definitely not. I think Princess Serini has a secondary purpose behind this trial of hers. She brings different nobles with her every day, as if she wanted to acclimatize them to Elantris.
What good would that do?
I don't know, Karete, but it is important to her. If Shaor's men attack the nobility, it would destroy whatever the princess is trying to accomplish. I've tried to warn her that not all Elantrians are as docile as the ones she's seen, but I don't think she believes me. We'll just have to keep Shaor's men away until Serini is done.
Which will be?
Domai only knows. She won't tell me. She gets suspicious every time I try to probe her for information.
Well, Sul, you'd better find a way to make us stop soon. Either that, or prepare her to deal with several dozen ravenous maniacs, Golo.
A dot in the center, a line running a few inches above it, and another line running along its right side. Aeon, Aeon. The starting point of every other Aeon. Raoden continued to draw, his fingers moving delicately and quickly, leaving luminescent trails behind them. He completed the box around the center dot, then drew two larger circles around it. Aeon Taiye, the symbol for travel. Raoden didn't stop here either. He drew two long lines extending from the corners of the box, a proscription that the Aeon was to affect only him, then four smaller Aeons down the side to delineate the exact distance it was to send him. A series of lines crossing the top instructed the Aeon to wait to take effect until he tapped its center, indicating that he was ready. He made each line or dot precisely. Length and size was very important to the calculations. It was still a relatively simple Aeon, nothing like the incredibly complex healing Aeons that the book described. Still, Raoden was proud of his increasing ability. It had taken him days to perfect the four Aeon series that instructed Taiye to transport him precisely 10 body lengths away. He watched the glowing pattern with a smile of satisfaction until it flashed and disappeared, completely ineffective.
You're getting better, Sue.
Galadon leaned on the windowsill, peering into the chapel. Raoden shook his head.
Yeah, I have a long way to go, Galadon.
The doula shrugged. Galadon had stopped trying to convince Raoden that practicing Aeon Dor was pointless. No matter what else happened, Raoden always spent a few hours each day drawing his Aeons. It comforted him. He felt the pain less when he was drawing Aeons, and he felt more at peace during those few short hours than he had in a long time.
How are the crops?
Galadon turned around, looking back at the garden. The corn stalks were still short, barely more than sprouts. Raoden could see their stems beginning to wilt. The last week had seen the disappearance of most of Galadon's workers, and now only the doula remained to labor on the diminutive farm. Every day he made several treks to the well to bring water to his plants, but he couldn't carry much, and the bucket Serini had given them leaked.
They'll live. Remember to have Karete send for some fertilizer in the next order.
We can't do that, my friend. The king mustn't find out that we're raising our own food.
Well, I suppose you could order some dung instead.
Too obvious.
Well, ask for some fish then. Claim you've gotten a sudden craving for trike.
He should have thought a little more before he put the garden behind his own home. The scent of rotting fish was not something he looked forward to.
You learned that Aeon from the book. What was it supposed to do?
Aeon Taiye? It's a transportation Aeon. Before the Riode, that Aeon could move a person from Elantris to the other side of the world. The book mentions it because it was one of the most dangerous Aeons.
Dangerous?
You have to be very precise about the distance it is to send you. If you tell it to transport you exactly 10 feet, it will do so, no matter what happens to be 10 feet away. You could easily materialize in the middle of a stone wall.
You're learning much from the book, then?
Some things. Hints, mostly.
Raoden flipped back in the book to a page he had marked.
Like this case. About 10 years before the Riode, a man brought his wife to Elantris to receive treatment for her palsy. However, the Elantrian healer drew Aeon Ayin slightly wrong, and instead of just vanishing, the character flashed and bathed the poor woman in a reddish light. She was left with black splotches on her skin and limp hair that soon fell out. Sound familiar? She died a short time later. She threw herself off a building, screaming that the pain was too much.
What did the healer do wrong?
It wasn't an error so much as an omission. He left out one of the three basic lines. A foolish error, but it shouldn't have had such a drastic effect. It's almost like...
Like what, Sue?
Well, the Aeon wasn't completed, right? So maybe the healing began, but couldn't finish because its instructions weren't complete. What if the mistake still created a viable Aeon? One that could access the door, but couldn't provide enough energy to finish what it started?
What are you implying, Sue?
That we aren't dead, my friend.
No heartbeat, no breathing, no blood. I couldn't agree with you more.
No, really, don't you see? Our bodies are trapped in some kind of half-transformation. The process began, but something blocked it. Just like in that woman's healing. The door is still within us, waiting for the direction and the energy to finish what it started.
I don't know that I follow you, Sue.
That's why our bodies never heal. It's like they're trapped in the same moment in time. Frozen, like a fish in a block of ice. The pain doesn't go away because our bodies think time isn't passing. They're stuck, waiting for the end of their transformation. Our hair falls away, and nothing new grows to replace it. Our skin turns black in the spots where the Sheod began, then halted as it ran out of strength.
It seems like a leap to me, Sul.
It is, but I'm sure it's true. Something is blocking the door. I can sense it through my aeons. The energy is trying to get through, but there's something in the way. As if the aeons' patterns are mismatched. We're not dead, Galadon, and we're not damned. We're just unfinished.
Great, Sul. Now you just have to find out why.
Raoden nodded. They understood a little more, but the true mystery, the reason behind Elantris' fall, remained.
But I'm glad the book was of help.
Wait a minute, Galadon. You don't really care about my studies, do you? You just wanted to know if your book was useful.
Why would I care about that?
I don't know. But you've always been so protective of your study. You haven't shown it to anyone. And you never even go there yourself. What is so sacred about that place and its books?
Nothing. I just don't want to see them ruined.
How did you find that place anyway? You say you've only been in Elantris a few months, but you seem to know your way through every road and alley. You led me straight to Sheor's bank, and the market's not exactly the kind of place you'd have casually explored.
The doula grew increasingly uncomfortable as Raoden spoke.
Can a man keep nothing to himself, Raoden? Must you drag everything out of me?
Raoden realized how accusatory his words had sounded. Galadon had given him nothing but support since his arrival. Raoden turned to leave the doula alone.
My father was an Elantrian. I lived with him until I was old enough to move away. I always thought it was wrong for a doula to live in Aerelon, away from his people and his family. I guess that's why the door decided to give me the same curse. They always said that Elantris was the most blessed of cities. But my father was never happy here. I guess even in paradise, there are those who don't fit in. He became a scholar. The study I showed you was his. However, Duladel never left his mind. He studied farming and agriculture, though both were useless in Elantris. Why farm when you can turn garbage into food? He wished he had studied healing when he found my mother dying beside him in bed one morning. Some diseases strike so quickly, even Elantris can't stop them. My father became the only depressed Elantrian I ever knew. That's when I finally understood that there weren't gods. For a god could never feel such agony. He couldn't return home. The Elantrians of old were as exiled as we are today, no matter how beautiful they might have been. People don't want to live with something so superior to themselves. They can't stand such a visible sign of their own inferiority. He was happy when I returned to Duladan. He told me to be a farmer. I left him a poor, lonely god in a divine city, wishing for nothing so much as the freedom to be a simple man again. He died about a year after I left. Did you know that Elantrians could die of simple things, such as heart death? They lived much longer than regular people, but they could still die, especially if they wanted to. My father knew the signs of heart death. He could have gone in to be healed, but he chose to stay in his study and disappear. Just like those aeons you spend so much time drawing.
So you hate Elantris?
Hate? No, I don't hate. That isn't the doula way. Of course, growing up in Elantris with a bitter father made me a poor doula. You've realized that I can't take things as lightly as my people would. I see a taint on everything, like the sludge of Elantris. My people avoided me because of my demeanor, and I was almost glad when the Sheo took me. I didn't fit Duladel, no matter how much I enjoyed my farming. I deserved this city, and it deserves me. Golo?
I suppose an optimistic comment wouldn't do much good right now.
Definitely not. You optimists just can't understand that a depressed person doesn't want you to try and cheer them up. It makes us sick.
Then just let me say something true, my friend. I appreciate you. I don't know if you fit in here. I doubt any of us do. But I value your help If new Elantris succeeds, then it will be because you were there to keep me from throwing myself off a building.
Raoden turned fitfully. He didn't have much of a bed, just a collection of blankets in the chapel's back room. However, discomfort wasn't what kept him up. There was another problem, a worry in the back of his mind. He was missing something important. He had been close to it earlier, and his subconscious harried him, demanding that he make the connection. But what was it? What clue barely registered haunted him? After his discussion with Galadon, Raoden had returned to his Aeon practice. Then he had gone for a short look around the city. All had been quiet. Sheor's men had stopped attacking New Elantris, instead focusing on the more promising potential presented by Serini's visits. It had to be related to his discussions with Galadon, he decided. Something to do with the Aeons, or perhaps Galadon's father. What would it have been like to be an Elantrian back then? Could a man really have been depressed within these amazing walls? Who, capable of marvelous wonders, would be willing to trade them for the simple life of a farmer? It must have been beautiful back then. So beautiful.
Ah, merciful Doma!
Raoden snapped upright in his blankets. A few seconds later, Seolin and Marisha, who made their beds in the main room of the chapel, burst through the door. Galadon and Karete weren't far behind. They found Raoden sitting in amazed stupefaction.
Soon?
Raoden stood and strode out of the room. A perplexed entourage followed. Raoden barely paused to light a lantern, and the pungent odor of Serini's oil didn't even faze him. He marched into the night, heading straight for the Hall of the Fallen. The man was there, still mumbling to himself, as many of the Hoi did even at night. He was small and wrinkled. His skin folded in so many places, he appeared 1,000 years old. The hint hadn't come during his discussions with Galadon at all. It had come during his short visit delivering food to the Hoid. Raoden had heard the man's mumbling 1,000 times and never made the connection. Raoden placed a hand on each of the man's shoulders.
What was so beautiful?
Beautiful. One so very beautiful.
Old man, if there is a soul left in that body of yours, even the slightest bit of rational thought, please... tell me, what are you talking about?
Raoden raised a hand and began to draw in front of the man's face. He had barely completed Aeon Rayo before the man reached out. The man put his hand through the center of the Aeon.
We were so beautiful once. My hair so bright, my skin full of light. Aeons fluttered from my fingers. They were so beautiful.
You mean all this time?
10 years, Garita. This man was an Elantrian before the Riod.
Impossible. It's been too long.
Where else would they go? We know some of the Elantrians survived the fall of city and government. They were locked in Elantris. Some might have burned themselves, a few others might have escaped, but the rest would still be here. They would have become Hoid, losing their minds and their strength after a few years. Forgotten in the streets.
10 years. 10 years of suffering.
Raoden looked at the old man's eyes. They were lined with cracks and wrinkles and seemed dazed as if by some great blow. The secrets of Aeon Dor hid somewhere in this man's mind. The man's grip on Raoden's arm tightened almost imperceptibly, his entire body quivering with effort.
Take me out.
Where? Out of the city?
The lake.
I don't know what you mean, old one.
The man's eyes moved slightly, looking at the door.
Great, grab that light.
Raoden picked up the old man.
Galadon, come with us. Marisha and Seolin, stay here. I don't want any of the others to wake up and find us all gone. Seolin, please.
It was a bright night, moon hanging full in the sky, and the lantern almost wasn't necessary. Raoden carried the old Elantrian carefully. It was obvious that the man no longer had the strength to lift his arm and point, so Raoden had to pause at every intersection, searching the old man's eyes for some sign that they should turn. It was a slow process, and it was nearly morning before they arrived at a fallen building at the very edge of Elantris. The structure looked much like any other, though its roof was mostly intact.
Any idea what this was?
Actually, I think I do, Sue. It was some sort of meeting house for the Elantrians. My father came here occasionally, though I was never allowed to accompany him.
Kurete gave Galadon a startled look at the explanation, but she held her questions for another time. Raoden carried the old Elantrian into the hollow building. It was empty and nondescript. Raoden studied the man's face. He was looking at the floor. Galadon knelt and brushed away debris as he searched the floor.
There's an Aeon here.
Which one?
Rayo, I think.
Raoden furrowed his brow. The meaning of Aeon Rayo was simple. It meant spirit or spiritual energy. However, the Aeon Door Book had mentioned it infrequently and had never explained what magical effect the Aeon was meant to produce.
Push on it.
I'm trying, Sul. I don't think it's doing any...
The section of the floor began to fall away. Galadon scrambled back as the large stone block sank into the ground. Karate pointed at an Aeon she had pushed on the wall. Aeon Tei, the ancient symbol that meant open.
There are some steps here, Sue.
Galadon climbed down, and Karate followed with a lamp. After passing down the old Hoeed, Raoden joined them.
Clever mechanism.
Galadon studied the series of gears that had lowered the enormous stone block.
Marishe would be going wild about now, Kolo?
I'm more interested in these walls.
Raoden stared at the beautiful murals. The room was rectangular and squat, barely 8 feet tall. But it was brilliantly decorated with painted walls and a double row of sculpted columns.
Hold the lantern up.
White-haired figures with silver skin coated the walls, their two-dimensional forms engaged in various activities. Some knelt before enormous aeons. Others walked in rows, heads bowed. There was a sense of formality about the figures.
This place is holy, a shrine of some sort.
Religion amongst the Elantrians?
They must have had something. Perhaps they weren't as convinced of their own divinity as the rest of Aerilon.
My father never spoke of religion. But his people kept many secrets, even from their families.
Over there!
Karate pointed at the far end of the rectangular room, where the wall held only a single mural. It depicted a large, mirror-like blue oval. An Elantrian stood facing the oval, his arms outstretched and his eyes closed. He appeared to be flying toward the blue disc. The rest of the wall was black, though there was a large white sphere on the other side of the oval.
Lake!
It's painted sideways. See, he's falling into a lake.
Raoden nodded. The Elantrian in the picture wasn't flying. He was falling. The oval was the surface of a lake, lines on its sides depicting a shore.
It's like the water was considered a gate of some sort.
And he wants us to throw him in. Galadon, did you ever see an Elantrian funeral?
Never.
Raoden looked down at the old man's eyes. They pointed insistently at a side passage. Beyond the doorway was a room even more amazing than the first. Karate held up her lantern with a wavering hand.
Books!
Their light shone on rows and rows of bookshelves, extending into the darkness. The three wandered into the enormous room, feeling an incredible sense of age. Dust coated the shelves, and their footsteps left tracks.
Have you noticed something odd about this place, Sul?
No slime.
No slime.
Raoden had grown so used to Elantrian's clean streets that he'd almost forgotten how much work it took to make them that way.
I haven't found a single place in this town that wasn't covered with that slime, Sul. Even my father's study was coated with it before I cleaned it.
There's something else. Look up there.
A lantern.
They line the walls.
But why not use aeons? They did everywhere else.
I don't know. I wondered the same thing about the entrance. If they could make aeons that transported them instantly around the city, then they certainly could have made one that lowered a rock.
You're right.
Aeon Dor must have been forbidden here for some reason.
No aeons, no slime. Coincidence?
Perhaps.
Raoden checked the old man's eyes. He pointed insistently at a small door in the wall. It was carved with a scene similar to the mural in the first room. Galadon pulled open the door, revealing a long, seemingly endless passage cut into the stone.
Where in Dolokhin does this lead?
Out. The man asked us to take him out of Elantris.
Karete walked into the passage, running her fingers along its smoothly carved walls. Raoden and Galadon followed. The path quickly grew steep, and they were forced to take frequent breaks to rest their weak Elantrian bodies. They took turns carrying the old man as the slope turned to steps. It took over an hour to reach the path's end, a simple wooden door, uncarved and unadorned. Galadon pushed it open and stepped out into the weak light of dawn.
We're on the mountain.
Raoden stepped out beside his friend, walking onto a short platform cut into the mountainside. The slope beyond the platform was steep, but Raoden could make out the hints of switchbacks leading down. Abutting the slope was the city of Kaei, and beyond that stood the enormous monolith that was Elantris. He had never really realized just how big Elantris was. It made Kaei look like a village. Surrounding Elantris were the ghostly remains of the three other outer cities, towns that, like Kaei, had once squatted in the shadow of the great city. All were now abandoned. Without Elantris's magic, there was no way for Aerilon to support such a concentration of people. The city's inhabitants had been forcibly removed, becoming Aedon's workmen and farmers.
Sul, I think our friend is getting impatient.
Raoden looked down at the Elantrian. The man's eyes twitched back and forth insistently, pointing at a wide path leading up from the platform.
More climbing.
Not much.
Karete was at the top of the path.
It ends just up here.
Raoden nodded and hiked the short distance, joining Karete on the ridge above the platform.
Lake.
Raoden frowned. The lake was barely 10 feet deep, more like a pool. Its water was a crystalline blue, and Raoden could see no inlets or outlets.
What now?
We put him in.
Raoden knelt to lower the Elantrian into the pool. The man floated for a moment in the deep sapphire water. The old Elantrian's face seemed to smooth slightly, his eyes alive again. Those eyes held Raoden's for a moment, thanks shining therein. And then the man dissolved.
Dolokhin!
The old Elantrian melted away like sugar in a cup of Adol's tea. In barely a second, the man was gone. No sign remaining of flesh, bone, or blood.
I'd be careful if I were you, my prince.
Raoden looked down, realizing how close he was to the pool's edge. The pain screamed. His body shook as if it knew how close it was to relief. All he had to do was fall. Raoden stood, stumbling slightly as he backed away from the beckoning pool. He wasn't ready. He wouldn't be ready until the pain ruled him. As long as he had will left, he would struggle. He placed a hand on Galadon's shoulder.
When I am hoied, bring me here. Don't make me live in pain.
You're young to Elantris yet, Sul. You'll last for years.
The pain raged in Raoden, making his knees tremble.
Just promise, my friend. Swear to me you will bring me here.
I swear, Raoden.
Galadon's eyes betrayed his worry. Raoden nodded.
Come. We have a long trek back to the city.